you hear me, Don?
Oh, yes, I got you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, I have. Hang on a sec. Okay, I can hear you, but we haven't got any picture at the moment.
Probably a good thing.
We're not doing photo.
There's a female voice there. What's going on?
Hi.
We didn't tell her it was you, Warren.
That's how it works. Well, it's an honor, Faith. It's an absolute honor.
What happened? You can't spit it out, Scott. You gotta eat it. What happened?
I gave him a green tomato.
Oh, that's not nice, Faith.
That was nasty.
You guys ready?
Recording?
I'm stretching my groin.
Okay, do you guys have your notes together? The things you're gonna talk to the guest about?
That's a good one. I'm stretching my groin.
Yeah. Let's get it rolling.
Faith. Let's do it. Faith, you're kicking us off.
No, I'm not. I don't do that.
Yes, you do.
I feel vulnerable.
Faith, give me a little 1-2.
1-2.
4-3-4-5-6.
Check.
You guys ready?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, today's a great day. Well, it's early for us and midday for Warren Pohl, and we are turning the tables here at Trail Runner Nation, where Warren has offered to interview us.
Did we start yet?
I'm starting.
Okay. Just checking.
So let's start then.
We need some boom mics.
We do need some. You know, we have. How's your time, Warren?
Fine. I've had the morning from hell, and that's why the slight delay so far. But the afternoon, I'd far rather kick back, talk about running, and forget about what's been going on today.
Very good, very good. Well, that's exactly what we'll do. Scott, you going to kick this thing off?
Sure. Faith, you want to?
I'm good.
We need to bring Faith up a little bit. She's not being her.
She's not very perky this morning.
Yeah.
I haven't had my coffee.
All right, Scott.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
I'm Faith Goss.
And I'm Don Freeman.
And today we have our favorite Brit on, Warren Pohl. Thanks for joining us, Warren.
Always a pleasure, never a chore.
Never a chore, wow.
Well, today we're turning the tables, Scott, offered by Warren Pohl himself.
He said, have a round table.
So as we turn it, we'll have to mark a side of the table to know exactly where it's located. But as it spins, Warren offered to interview us, to turn the tables, vice versa.
And I have to say that I think he offered it like many, many, many months ago, but we've been kind of a little hesitant to do this.
Well, you have. I'm anxious.
Are you?
Yeah. Okay. What couldn't be more fun than being interviewed by Warren Pohl?
Well, I like talking to Warren, but I'm not real excited to talk about myself.
Well, we can always edit this thing, Scott.
Okay,
it'll
good.
Be all right. We have control of that. We're not sending the file to him.
Oh, that's
we
right.
We still have a
this
little bit.
This may be our first edited podcast.
In 2013, we edit our podcasts.
Hence, it shall be known. We are editing. Warren Pohl? Well, I guess you're going to take control of this thing. So here we sit at your whatever.
I feel vulnerable.
Well, this is an interesting time, and the idea came to me as you very honestly suggested a few months ago, because after we'd spoken that first time, I thought I'll find out a little bit more about these fine chaps on the other side of the pond I've been speaking with. We've been brought together by technology and by running, and it's been a wonderful thing. But there's very little on you. What shadowy figures you are. I started looking around, and, you know, I'm a journalist by trade. I have a rough idea how to find things, and there's not so much there. So I thought, well, what about an interview? So here we are. And I absolutely wouldn't want to be taking control because this is your show. But it's really nice to have an opportunity to ask some questions.
You know, Warren, we've done some research on Google searches, and we found that Faith actually gets way more Google searches than Don and myself, especially on the images of Google.
I'm known as
what do I look like on Google?
You don't have a hood on like you do this morning.
About two rows down on page one, you look an awful lot like Scott Jurek as well, actually.
Yeah, I would be curious to what you actually found, if you have a little tidbit on each of us that you found through your Google searches or through whatever your preferred search engine may be.
Faith, I am so glad you are there. This is like telepathy. You have led me straight into my first opening gambit. And just because he was the one that came up first, we'll start with Don Freeman from Roseville, California. That much I think I could find out. And I'm wondering if Don Freeman would be Dr. Donald B. Freeman, D.C., chiropractor.
True. That I am not the children's book writer of many years ago, so you're right. Chiropractor, that's me.
And the D.C., I presume, is that a professional qualification or just somewhere you once lived?
Professional qualification that they try to justify the tuition at college for.
I used to know what DC stood for. What does DC stand for?
Doctor of Chiropractic.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Doctor of Chiropractic. So a genuine doctor with a B in the middle. We'll spare you that if you don't want to bring that one up, because I'm not a fan of my middle name either.
Well, then I'll share mine if you share yours, Warren. Remember that old game.
Yeah.
Mine is. So I'm throwing mine out there, which pretty much obligates you. So here we go. Middle name is Brent, B-R-E-N-T.
That's a good name.
Yeah, I'm all right with Brent.
Brent, that is a good name, unless you were in the borough of Brent in London, in which case you might want to change your name. So as long as you're over there, a great name.
Is Brent a bad part of London?
Brent is a, they would probably call it up and coming, but generally most people are avoidable.
At one time, it was the place to be, I'm sure.
It definitely has an edge, and it's worth visiting, but only the brave stay for a long time. Okay, Douglas, there you go. What can I say?
Well, there's nothing wrong with Douglas.
You that's know, a good name.
That's a name around here that we hold in high regard.
Yeah, I mean, I think a Doug could work, but I don't know, Douglas. It's always felt a bit weird.
In fact, we have an entire street named after it.
We do.
Really? Here in our hometown, yes.
Right. And after Warren, Douglas Pohl.
I was thinking it was after a president. Not a president, a general, sorry.
Oh,
oh boy.
Yeah,
That's terrible.
We'll put you on Google.
Yeah.
Well, so for Scott on Google, I mean, again, not a huge amount coming up, but I did find that Netafim, which... might actually be a series of initials. Netafim USA welcomes Scott War as Business Development Manager for the Agricultural Division, Fresno, California, 2011. So what do you say, Scott? Is that you?
That is me, yes.
He's a good journalist.
Business Development Manager for the Agricultural Division?
Yes.
Well, so, in a roundabout way.
So revealing, isn't it?
I've worn many hats. and currently have a different hat, but I still work for Netafim, yes.
And what do you do for Netafim, Scott? What do you do when you're not on the trail?
He has a broom. he sweeps for them now.
I empty trash a lot. No, Netafim is a drip irrigation manufacturer, the world's largest, based in Israel. And I work for the U.S. Division, and helping them develop business and sell to farmers.
To irrigate crops and grow stuff, I presume.
Exactly.
He's a crop duster.
He's only feeding the world, Warren.
So you're fixing the world, and Scott is feeding the world.
Well, Faith.
And Faith.
and Faith is notoriously difficult to find anything concrete on Google at all. So, Faith, I'm going to have to throw this one to the floor. What do you do when you're not running? Give us something, because Google was giving me nothing.
Wow, that's really interesting. I know I have one actual Google image of myself that seems to be true.
Is it your back?
No.
You've seen that
there's
one.
There's one, the only one I could find at this end that came. It had sort of a female, a petite-looking female. I figured that could be Faith, with arms up in the air on a trail somewhere. But it was from behind, and I don't know. That was the only one I could come up with that could be close.
That probably was me.
With her arms in the air, right?
With arms in there, yeah, because that's on the Trail Runner Nation site.
Yeah.
There is a Google image of me back in the day when I played water polo in college. There is a Google image of that in my...
In a black and yellow top?
Yeah, it's blue and yellow, yeah.
Okay, I found that one as well, but I couldn't quite tell.
Yeah, that was from college. When I'm not on the trail, I can be found in jail. I work in a jail. I work in a prison as a nurse.
Wow.
Yep.
That's pretty full on. So you've all got quite full on jobs, but completely different, which begs the question, what brings you all to be sat in what I believe is the foyer of Don's office before everyone else comes in, bringing us the wonder of Trail Runner Nation?
That is correct. We're sitting in the opening entrance of Don's office right now.
So
at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Scott, go on.
Well, Scott and I were because you asked kind of how the three of us came together. I think that was the question that I heard.
That's where we began. Yes.
So I'll pick up on that and say Scott and I had been running for years together and putting some miles on the trail, looking for some podcasts was kind of one of our topics one morning and we said, well, we can do a podcast, and Scott says, I have a portable MP3 recorder, and I thought, well, we might have to raise our game a little bit there, Scott. I don't know, but that's where it started. And then Faith actually came into this office as a patient, and we started talking about running. And she had more excitement and more enthusiasm about trail running. And I just sat there and listened with. Good thing she was face down because my jaw was open listening to all of her enthusiasm. And she said, I just love to run long, and the further I go, the more I love it. And I thought, this is the kind of energy that we need.
And what Faith doesn't know is right after she left, in fact, she may have still even been on the table, Don called me and says, hey, I just met this lady that we need to have on as a co-host. And that's how it all started.
So you're clearly all in a neighborhood there. And when did it begin? Because I've found some sort of stuff that Trail Runner Nation maybe wasn't always Trail Runner Nation.
We just saw the picture of Faith Goss.
I had to Google Faith Goss and see her polo picture. I'd never seen it before. You may get some hits.
Oh, shoot.
How's that being? That was at college, was it, Faith?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Playing water polo, did you say?
Yep.
That's
me too.
Water polo to jail. Now, water polo strikes me as a game that looks pretty simple, but actually I hear it's brutal up there with lacrosse and the rest of them.
Yeah, I played lacrosse too.
Too simple either.
What's that?
Jail doesn't strike me as simple either.
Depends on what kind of night it is. It's glorified babysitting, really.
I think I'd rather be in jail than play water polo. That's a tough endurance sport. You are doing the egg beater, right, with your feet constantly underneath the water to stay
getting
afloat.
Getting kicked, a lot of kicking.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of kicking.
Now Faith has quite a triple A type personality. She is very competitive. I went on a run with her. It was in between podcasts, actually. We said, well, what are we going to do for the next 40 minutes? And they said, well, let's go for a run. And we did. And I ended up chasing her around the block for 45 minutes.
Doubtful.
So there was a question earlier.
Before Trail Runner Nation, was the podcast called something else? And how far will we go back to go to episode one?
You know, this is a long story. I'll try to make it short. The whole thing started, the whole idea of a podcast started when Don and myself and Julie Fingar, who we've mentioned multiple times on this podcast, and another friend of ours, Rick Nelson, were on a night run. And we started talking, and I said, you know, I've been listening to some running podcasts, but there's really nothing out there for trail running and ultra running. And we just started throwing around and you know, one of the things I enjoy about running is talking to people that I run with about ultra running and learning things about it and trying to improve myself and learning tricks of the trade, if you will. And we finally said, you know what, we should do our own podcast. We could do this. And Don happened to know a gentleman that was in the radio business that was also an ultra runner. And he gave that guy, Scott Sandow, a call and said, hey, listen, we're thinking about doing this. And what do you think? Can you give us some tips? And he goes, well, heck, I'm in. And that's where it all started. And so we started a program called Ultra Runner Podcast. And we did that for about a year. And then we just kind of split ways and tried to, we wanted to take a little bit different direction with Trail Runner Nation. It would just happen naturally that we started Trail Runner Nation. And that's where we are today.
And the nation appears to have grown quite a long way from a podcast, given the way you bring everything in the forums and with people being able to get in as members. Was that always the intention, to make it a bit of a wider forum than just a place where people come and listen?
You know, that's actually another really, really neat question. When we started this, Don and I, when we decided to start Trail Runner Nation, Don and I knew nothing about audio recording other than what we had done with Ultra Runner Podcast, but we were in a real, you know, legit radio studio when we were doing that. And of course, like Don said, I had an MP3 player and we knew that we had to do better than that. So Don got on Google and started searching on how to do that. And then we knew we needed a website to host all this. And so my job was to start learning how to run a website and build a website. And because I'm not very smart and I like to delegate a lot, we had another friend that we met doing the podcast down in Texas. His name's Tim Smith, and he happens to be a web developer. And we called him and said, hey, Tim, we're looking at starting this Trail Runner Nation thing. Would you be interested in helping us out? And, you know, without hesitation, he said, absolutely. And so we were thinking we'd just have this little silly website to host our podcast. And he came to us and he says, hey, I want to try something differently to make it more of a socially interactive website. What do you think? And Don and I looked at each other and kind of went, duh, yeah. And so that's where Tim has really made this thing even a bigger thing than just a podcast for us.
And what about the guest list? It's eclectic, it's varied, it's random, but you've got the greatest names in ultra running down to stumbling bums like myself and everyone in between. Where did you find them? Were these people you knew already? Because, you know, okay, it's a very accessible sport, but you range far and wide.
You know, the sport's full of, you know, from one end to the other, and everybody likes to hear from, I think, everybody. The guy in the middle has as much to say as the guy at either end. And the story of ultra running is best told, you know, as a complete, you know, with a complete group. And so we've reached up front, we've reached in the middle. We realize that this sport requires a level of expertise, and sometimes it's not always we're not always able to get those people into our ears when we need them. So one of the things we wanted to do with Trail Runner Nation is bring in some of those mentors, some of the people that have helped us get to where we are. Not that we're very far, but we run down the trail, and to do that in any distance, you need to have some good advice from proven athletes that have been out there. So nutritionists like Sonny Blinde, the Sock Doc, and Dr. Mark Cucuzella are people that we've just run into through the social media sites, through other guests recommending them. With Chris McDougal said, you've got to have Mark Cucuzella on, and we go, well, who's Mark Cucuzella? And now he's for us a household name, and it's been a lot of fun reaching out and gaining new relationships. I think that's been one of the most rewarding things about the podcast is, you know, I feel like I know Warren Poole. My daughter certainly hopes so, as with the One Direction connection.
And Harry Styles.
Yeah, right. but I feel like, heck, I have new relationships all over the place, and I think that's been a lot of fun. Scott?
Well, and one of the things that's been just very, very fun about this is as this thing has been building, we've had Nation members say, hey, you need to talk to this person.
Right.
And you know, we can't talk to everybody that gets recommended, but we definitely look into those people. You know, just yesterday, as an example, we had a guy that emailed us or Facebooked us or something like that about a race that he had started, and in memory of his mother, who had passed away from ovarian cancer. And you know, just stories like that you know, we're interested in, that come from Nation members or recommendations from other runners. That's where we get the guest list. And ironically, you know, we've been doing Trail Runner Nation for a year, and we've been podcasting with you know, the previous podcast, Ultra Runner Podcast, and Trail Runner Nation for over 2 years now. And we were just laughing the other day because we have so many new podcast ideas with different guests coming up that we had to make a list and start tracking these. And Don and I, because we see each other frequently running, we just said, could you ever believe that we'd have this much to talk about on podcasts? Because we have some really neat podcasts coming up that we've never even touched on, subjects and guests that we've never talked to. And here we've been doing this for 2 years, and we still are talking about running.
It's a frightening thing how you would imagine that running, you put one foot in front of the other, everyone's been doing it since they were kids, and how hard could it be? But the more you look, the more you find, and the more you talk to people, the more you realize that it's a never-ending subject. And I would imagine in 10 years you'd have a list just as long as you've got now, if not longer.
If you sat down and said, here's a blank sheet of paper, write down all the topics that you're going to have on podcasts, it seems like you'd run out of ideas pretty quickly, but they keep coming, and it's been a joy doing it.
So we've got you loosened up nice and gently now. You've been talking about podcasts and not yourselves, you know. So let's just reframe a little. And this is all about running. It's all about running a long way, and so. For no better reason than I hardly ever get to speak to her because she avoids me like the plague, Faith. As you this morning, and I have the pleasure of talking to you, tell me a little bit about how you got into running a long way.
I was volunteering at Western States 100 in June. June of 2011.
And I was volunteering because
I was volunteering as a nurse. I was just wanted to get involved medically. I'd wanted to do it for actually quite a few years and just never had the time off in June. So I was out at the Last Chance aid station, which is really the kickoff to the canyons, which is the most challenging part of Western States. So I was weighing people there, and it was just really inspiring to see these what at the time I thought were crazy people running super far. I wanted to understand why, what made them want to do that. And I wanted to feel that. And so after the day had concluded, I kind of did some research into local running groups, and there happened to be a local running group in the area called Folsom Trail Runners, which is on this really awesome site called meetup.com. And so, I decided to join, and I had never run more than maybe 3 miles in my entire life. And I said, I need people to push me.
3 miles in separate stints, not 3 miles in total ever.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I think I had run maybe 3 miles put together at like one. And because I had to or something. I don't know. I never went out to run for fun. It was probably like a punishment in the pool. Get out and run.
It's because guys were chasing her.
So I just decided to kind of try out running. And then I noticed that, you know, the first 3 miles pretty much sucked. So I just had to keep going until I could find my happy place. And the further I went, the better I felt. So it just kind of became something fun to do. And next thing I know, I was signing up for my first marathon, and that just wasn't fun enough. So I just kept going.
And then you were unfortunate enough to get an injury, and that brought you to Don's Door. How did you find Don's Door?
Don is pretty popular locally via word of mouth with different runners for having magical hands.
Really?
Yeah, he's pretty magical. Popular.
It wasn't the running community I was hoping to convince I had magical hands, but so be it.
So sometimes those are just the breaks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I actually, on the street, if I was to run in your region and if I were to pull a hamstring or find a little bit of an Achilles issue or something, I said, hey, I need someone. What are the chances people are going to go, you need to go and see Don with the magic hands?
Pretty likely. Pretty likely. He's the go-to guy locally.
Wow. So how long have you been situated where you are fixing people with those hands, Don?
I've been here since 97, so however many years that is, 15 years or so, in the same spot.
Okay, so that builds up a fair base. Now, as a chiropractor, you're well-versed in the ills of running. Clearly, most chiropractors and medical professionals would recommend we don't run as far as we do, or would probably suggest there's something wrong with us for doing what we do. What brought you to going so far when you must see more than your share of people coming through the door limping who've not gone anywhere near as far?
You know, my observations have been that the people that do and that are active are well equipped to do what we're doing. But it has to be built with a gradual base. You can't get out there and just go from zero to, you know, a 50K. You'll suffer some consequences for that. But if you're able to build up, our bodies are resilient. They're able to recover and accommodate the stresses that we're putting on it. So good running form, proper rest, and just being wise with how you roll it out allows us to do it. And you look at some of the healthiest people that you know, they're the most active people that you know. And you look at the people that have, you know, a knee replacement, it's not because they have more miles on them than anybody else. In fact, they probably have fewer miles than anybody else. They're deconditioned. The muscles aren't there to help to support that joint. The joints haven't adapted to constant stress on it. They sit on the couch, they get up, they twist their knee, and they end up with a meniscus tear. Next thing you know, they're on a downward spiral. So I find that people that are active, look at the race entry, find some people that have a few decades on them, and wow, that's who I want to be. I want to be that, you know, 60, 70, because I'm 50. I'm coming up on 50. I'm still
in my
50. Fours.
You're not 50 yet.
I'm grabbing 50. Why do we look forward and grab that next decade? So I really, that's another good discussion topic. Put that down for a podcast. Why do we reach forward for that? And so I think we're just fine to get out there and run, Warren. So that's, I think that's why we say run Moss at the end.
No, I think that's a beautiful sentiment, and I think it's a lesson that is learned the further you run, and you know, you get past that early stage of the body adapting and start to learn a bit more about listening to what you should be doing and listening to your body and not injuring yourself. But you have to break through to reach that. You've obviously long since done that. But I just wondered, were you running a long way sort of concurrent with being a chiropractor? Because I figured as a chiropractor, you'd see a lot of those people in those, you know, the people who've got to their sort of, they've started going a bit further, then they're getting injured. And unless you understood that people could really break through that barrier by being a part of the ultra community or something like it, you know, I just wondered how that sat with you. Have you always run?
No. I've always been to the extreme something. I was into bodybuilding at one time was heavy. I was more like I'm 175-ish now, 172. I was 230 at one point, and hit the weights pretty hard, and then
ripped
and got away from that.
You should Google some images.
You
with
won't find it.
Don Freeman bodybuilding. You won't find it.
No, you won't find that.
And maybe so, I'll post that on this podcast. I have a picture of him, and he was Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was ripped.
You did just drop that in there and thought that, well, you know, I'm just going to say I was a bodybuilder because that's true, and let's just carry on with the conversation. But it sort of throws a big brick in the road at that point. Bodybuilding is, that's definitely an extreme. How long did that go on for? Let's just take a little diversion quickly.
Oh, that was early on. I mean, I graduated at, this is not where we're supposed to go. This is a trail running podcast, Warren Paul.
There is nowhere we're not supposed to go.
So I graduated with a whole 132 pounds at the same height, pretty skinny kid. And I went into boot camp, gained 20 pounds in a short 3 months because they work you hard And so that was probably my first exposure to endurance and pushing the body, and I liked it. I ended up going to Memphis, Tennessee, where I went to school in the Marines there, and I had a choice of going to the E Club and going with all the nightlife that happens in the Enlisted Man's Club, or go to the gym, and I found the gym was better. I liked that. And so I started working out, came back, and just picked up on that and liked the challenge and pushing the body and going through the dark spots that you can get in the middle of a workout. Same thing with trail running. You can find you get to really learn who you are when you find yourself struggling and find yourself in when you're pushing yourself. And I like that relationship of trying to work through those things.
Nice. Well, I mean, I have dabbled with bodybuilding myself, but not on the big ends of the weights, more on the story ends as a journalist. I was lucky enough to go to Mr. Olympia in 2009, I think. I've done some stuff with a few former Mr. Olympias. I find it freakish and incredible. It's at that level, it's a ridiculous thing to do to your body, but the dedication required to make your body look like that is something else. And the final thing, the paracom thing I would draw to pull us back onto the trail, for anyone who doesn't know much about bodybuilding and thinks it's just a meathead's game, read a piece called The Iron by a man called Henry Rollins, former frontman of Black Flag. And he makes the point that, whether it's a 40 kilo bar, it's always going to be a 40 kilo bar. And it doesn't matter how many people blow smoke up your ass or tell you you're great. If you don't train, you can't lift that. And that bar will tell you who you are every day. And I think the same parallel can be made for an ultra marathon. Doesn't matter who you are or what you've done. 50 miles is 50 miles.
Agreed. I think the bodybuilding sport is in, at the level that you're talking about, has moved into a dangerous place with the pharmacology that's around that sport, and
it's compulsory at that level.
Yeah, it's not good.
Protein shake.
Right. So back on the trail, I ended up running a marathon and thought that was the limit. Didn't need to do any more. I couldn't walk up a curb when I was done with the thing, and to even think that I would double that happened with a good friend that said we can get a jacket if we run further. And so that's all I needed to be enticed. AR-15.
It was a jacket that took you from, well, what took you to marathon in the first place? Was it the sort of characteristic goal of the marathon being a pinnacle?
Well, you know, I think that's on a lot of people's list of things to do, right? And so, I'm walking down the hall, and somebody said, I just ran a marathon. And I said, I'd like to do that. And he says, well, why don't you? And that's all it took. I'm not hard to convince.
So that was it. It took a jacket to get you to 50 miles.
Well, and let me back up there and tell a little bit, put a little more color in that story. As I recall the story, because we have a common friend that got him to run this 50-mile race, the story goes that he said to Don, "Hey Don, there's this 50-mile race called American River 50. We should go run it." And Don said, and I'm probably embellishing, but what do you always say? Don't let facts get in the way of a good story.
Never.
And Don said, "No, you can't. It's humanly impossible to run 50 miles. You can't do it, and I'm not going to do it." And shortly thereafter, in a different conversation, as this friend of ours was Jeff was talking to Don, said, "Well, you know, if you finish, you get a jacket." And all of a sudden, Don's eyes light up like he doesn't have any jackets in his closet at home. His eyes light up and said, "You get a jacket? Okay, let's do this." And that was the beginning of his ultra career.
Excellent. So that got you into going long. Now, we'll come to sort of respective distances, favorite races, things like that in due course. But we still have to deal with you, Scott, and your running history and what brings you to be a long distance runner on the trail these days.
Similar to Don,
you like jackets?
I like jackets.
You don't have jackets?
No, I got out of, you get out of high school and you start college and you start thinking about life and you make a list of things that you want to do. And on my list was, I wanted to run a marathon. I hated running, hated it. Never ran, didn't do cross country, didn't do track. I hated running. Like Faith, I think the most that I'd ever run at one spot in my entire life was 3 miles. And so anyway, on my list was this marathon. And of course, going through college and getting into professional life, you just don't have time to do that sort of stuff. And I had met Don and this other friend of ours, Jeff, through church, and our friend Jeff was going through some cancer treatment, and he was coming back from some surgeries and wanted to get back in shape. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to go ask him, you know, now that I can, maybe since he's gone through this cancer thing, I can run with him because he's sick. So I went to him. I said, hey, I want to run a marathon. And the short story of that is I started training for this marathon, and we picked it out and registered and everything. And about 2 weeks before the marathon, I sprained my ankle severely, and I was not able to run that marathon. And it really beat me up because I thought, I'm going to run a marathon and be done with this. Then I could put a check on that, and I don't ever have to run again. Because I didn't run the marathon, I had to recover from this ankle injury. Well, I don't run on Sunday, and most of the marathons in California anyway are on Sunday. So I'm looking down the road 2-3 months to see what other kind of race I can do, what other kind of marathons are around that I could do, because I put in all this training for an entire, 9 months or 10 months or whatever. And Don and Jeff had been doing these ultra marathons also, and there was a local one that is very popular, probably the most popular 50K in at least the United States, called Way Too Cool.
And which I believe Don is wearing a shirt for today.
He is. He's actually wearing a Way Too Cool shirt. And it's a 50K, and I thought, well, a marathon distance, what's 31 point whatever 50K is, 31.2 miles. I'll just go do that instead. So I registered for that, which was a good 3-4 months later, which gave me time to recover from my sprained ankle and stay in shape. And I went and ran this trail ultra, Way Too Cool, which is fairly close to here, and fell in love with the trails. That's where it all started for me, as I fell in love with the trails. And
if you can fall in love with Olmsted Loop, you can fall in love with everything.
You're not a big Olmsted Loop.
That's a section of Way Too Cool that is not very pretty.
But we have some beautiful trail around here, Warren, and you have an invitation to come out anytime. Not that we own the trail, but but we do own our homes that are around the trail, and you're welcome to stay with us. We'll feed you. We'll have you stay in a nice, clean linen that we have prepared for you, and we'll show you some of the most beautiful trail around here. Wow.
Well, I would absolutely love that, and you should be careful with offers like that, because I am freelance and self-unemployed, and I do love running, and the weather here stinks. I have just signed up for the first ultra of the year, which is next week down a filthy canal towpath in outer, sort of on the edges of London, back into the city. It is not a good-looking race, and what you're talking about with those sorts of trails, I can imagine. You have rather nicer places to run out there.
At the foothills here of the Sierras, and then also challenging, and you wouldn't think about it, would be, at least I didn't, is on the coast right there near San Francisco. In that area, there are some beautiful mountains and some ranges out there right along the coast, and it is spectacular views and some challenging elevation changes. Not, it's close to sea level, obviously, but you can get some climbing in over there.
Excellent. Well, there's one little common thread which I think I might have been able to pull out of all of your ultra running experiences, which might be common to a lot of Nation members. And so just wonder to all three of you, how many of you, when you ran your first ultra, thought that it would be the beginning of something that would go on much, much longer? Or did you think it was just like, I'm just going to do this one race and that's it?
No, I knew it was the beginning of a sickness.
So you're the wise one, Faith. We've got one wise so far. And what about you two guys?
You know, for me, like I mentioned, I was going to do a marathon and be done. It was a check mark on a list that I could scratch off. So going into it, there was no expectation of continuing to do this. The problem was, is even after immediately after the 50K, even though I was in a lot of pain and very sore and had some blisters and stuff like that, I knew that I enjoyed what Faith described, which is taking your body to that level of discovery of what you can do. And once I got the feeling of that with some scenery, with some pretty cool scenery, I knew that I was hooked.
I think that's a deep question, Warren. You know, I love the sport. I wrestle with the sport. I always think this next race might be my last. I don't know, because there's other things that might take precedence, and we have to prioritize things in our lives. And how wise is it to pour that much energy into something? Then again, I think how important it is to pour that energy so that I have energy to do other things. So I'm constantly wrestling with it, and I hope I never really come up with the solution. I love the quandary. I love wondering whether is this a good investment or not. I think in the end it always is. I think that it's a good investment in my health and my mental welfare. I think I'm have kind of an obsessive personality that and I think a lot of us do that are out there on the trail. So I think it's a good place to put my obsession. Otherwise, I could easily find other places that aren't quite so good. So I appreciate the trail for that. The friendships that are out there. If I think to walk away, I'm not sure I can really walk away from it, because there's so many connections that I have with people that I just really enjoy out there, and those friendships are built in and around the running scene. So how could I walk from that? And the fact that my body can still do it, I feel like, well, perhaps the final decision will be made by a joint or two that'll say, well, you can only go so far. Your machine wasn't really built for, you know, that many miles. So eventually I'll probably have it taken away anyway. So I better just stay in it while I'm in it. So it's a quite a mess, this running stuff.
It is an interesting one. And that raises a point, actually, Don. I just wonder, is you can think about, you know, is this a profitable thing to be doing? You know, are you, as you enter another year, you know, this is the time of year for thinking about these things. As we enter another year in running, and races get booked up, and you know, your A races, your B races, your goals, you decide what you want to do. And you can't just make a decision for a big race the week before. It's got to be done months in advance. Otherwise, you'll never be ready. And you plan to put all that preparation in again. Do you ever, any of you, feel either that you are, A, am I just repeating a pattern from last year, and therefore is that profitable? Or B, the trail is always different. You know, the experiences are always different. There is so much to be had that is positive from this journey, whatever it may take, whether you're traveling for your races or traveling in your mind and your body through what you achieve in them, that it's a profitable thing to keep doing. Do any of you suffer that quandary of, you know, am I repeating, or yes, I should definitely keep going?
Well, there are times that I hope to repeat, because if you've had a good year, you want to try to, or a good race, you want to try to go out there and strike that same experience again. So there's times I want to repeat, and there's times that I certainly don't want to repeat, because I've had my share, as we all have, of just disaster. And I think the disasters are more have a greater pull than the ones that come off well. You know, we say we want to go back and make that one right. I've seen more people, in at least for myself and others around me, that say, well, I've got to go back to that race because I left something out there, or I need to fix that. And so the ones that are the toughest seem to have the biggest draw. The ones we've done well at, I almost want to leave those alone. It's like, I've done that one okay. Let's leave that there. I'm not sure I want to go out and test my mettle again on that one, because I might not pull it off, and then I'll have another problem on my hand. I've got some mental issues going on here, don't I, guys? Uh-oh, if there's any professionals out there that would like to give me a call, I'm available.
I think you're in good company, Donna. I think the only worrying thing is that you've only just realized.
I owe it all to you, Warren. Thank you for opening this can of worms.
That's quite all right. These couch sessions are perfectly free. So, same question to you, Faith. How do you feel going into another year? Do you feel it's a risk of looking forward to finding new challenges out there?
I would say that every time I may run the same section of trail, I never feel the same way twice. So I don't think I could ever say that, you know, I'm just slogging through another year and signing up for this race again. I just feel like every time I run the same section of trail, I just always feel something different. And so that's why I think that's what keeps me running, you know, the same trail, is that I can never know what to expect at any particular moment. So I think going into a new year, I'm just excited for the different emotions and the different conversations that are going to come up on the trail. So that's where I stand.
That's a very positive way of looking at it. I really like that. The idea that it doesn't matter where you're running, it's never the same.
Mm-hmm. Scott,
wake up.
I don't want to answer because I'm dealing with a mental state right now that, you know, I have not registered for any races, and I've sat down a number of times to look at the race calendar and trying to decide what races I want to enter, and I haven't pulled the trigger. I do enjoy going out and running the trails, and I love being out in nature, but I'm questioning in my own personal running, do I really enjoy racing versus just going out and running? And, of course, Don and I have had many conversations on this on runs, and I think that I do need to register for something, because that's the thing that motivates you to push yourself in training. And so I got to do something, but right now I'm just not excited about racing per se. I get excited about other people racing. You know, Don is registered and got into Western States for the second time this year, and I see him getting excited and preparing himself and training for Western States, and I'm just thrilled to see that preparation. And I realize that I need to do that, but right now I'm just kind of sitting here thinking, you know, I don't know if I really enjoy racing. The last race I had last fall was not a good experience for me, and I do need to get back to that race specifically, because I had expectations that were not met, and so there is a little bit of payback involved there, but I'm not sure where I am yet.
But I think that actually takes a lot more guts to say that, particularly out loud in a forum like this. You know, it's one thing talking with your buddies on the trail. It's another thing putting it out publicly. To say that...
We're going to edit it out.
And you're,
of course. This is going to be a 10-minute long podcast when it comes out, isn't it?
Yes. And you're assuming people actually download this stuff, Warren.
I believe they do. You know, I mean, I found it.
True.
And even some people who I know have listened to it as well without me having told them about it. So it's definitely getting out there, even over here. Your reach is mightier than you perhaps imagine. But no, to put that out there like that, I think that takes that's a strong thing to do. But also, ultra running and trail running does not need to be defined by racing. It is what you want it to be. And I think there are times when it doesn't have to be about that race. If you're not pumped to get into racing, then you shouldn't necessarily beat yourself up about not racing for a bit. You should enjoy your running.
Although, you know, the racing is the thing that pushes you beyond your limits. If all you were doing is going out and running the trails, you probably wouldn't go beyond 4 hours or 2 hours or 3 hours.
Yeah, 4 hours.
You know, to go out and run a 50-mile race or a 100-mile race is something that pushes you beyond that. I would have never run 100 miles if it wasn't for a race. And so, you know, that definitely, and I'm not saying that will never race again. I'm just in a place right now where, you know, with work and family and things like that, where the racing may not be a priority. I definitely want to do more 100-mile races. I think that I enjoyed, that distance, tremendously. But I think just in this, you know, you ebb and flow with the priorities in your life. And I don't know whether racing right now for me is, you know, I will race this year. I'm not going to race a half a dozen races.
Let's break down race, because, you know, we go out there and we sign up for one of these events, right? I'm going to call it an event. And you can race it or you can run it, and you can enjoy it. and you can move with the community of migration of the group of the herd, moving from start to finish, and just enjoy the experience and roll through aid stations and have a supported long run and meet new faces and people. I mean, that can be what you go to a quote unquote race for. Yep. You don't necessarily have to be with your track shoes on and trying to do a personal best every time you go out there. You can just go out and have some fun and run with more runners.
Very, very good point. Training with aid stations rather than racing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, I guess it's all how you approach it. And I think it's okay to not race a race and just go out and enjoy it and not worry about your time at the end.
I learned that on this very podcast when you were talking with some guys last year about A races and about how they would use other races to prepare for them. And the whole aim of those races is not to go out all guns blazing. It's to get the mileage in and to, you know, achieve a set goal, but not a PB.
Yeah, how many times have you heard people say, are you racing or running this one? You know, and so that's a common question. And, you know, you usually position that, well, I'm running it just in case it doesn't come off well. just running this one.
So what about, while we're on the subject of races, favorite races, you can only pick one. The greatest, you know, it could be because everything fell apart. It could be because everything went just perfectly. But, Faith, what's your favorite race you've run to date and why?
I haven't run a whole lot of races, so this is kind of a hard question for me, but one of the most beautiful places that I've run that was really in my backyard growing up that I didn't even know about was Woodside 50K. It was incredibly challenging but incredibly beautiful. It's situated in the Redwoods, kind of on the coastal side south of San Francisco, and I grew up there going to used to be a Girl Scout, although I hire them now.
What?
Yeah.
You are really a Girl Scout?
Yeah, I was.
That's how she has, you know, you have the relationships yep. with your Girl uh-huh. Scout, right?
Yep. I used to go to Girl Scout camp in a place called Hutterd Park, and that's where Woodside 50K starts. And so that's the race that I really enjoy.
And was that as much because of the personal connection to the place, or was it also to do with the way things went on the day?
Both. I definitely left something out there that I still need to go back and get. I just haven't had the time.
All right, and what about you, Scott?
You know, that's very easy. Western States 100. You know, it's in our backyard. It is the granddaddy of them all. I was lucky enough the first time to put in the lottery that I got drawn, and I ran it, and the reason why it's my favorite is just because it was my first 100. To date, it's my only 100. And probably one of the hardest things I've ever done. And selfishly, in my own mind, one of the greatest accomplishments. Physically and mentally.
It couldn't be anything else. That would have to be a memorable one. I see you nodding there, Don.
Oh, wasn't nodding off. you're that
you're
thump.
One.
No, I would say for me would be Angeles Crest. It is, you know, doesn't have all the fanfare.
100 miler
that Western States has, and much. It's easier to get in. It's filled up quicker this year because the popularity of our sport is just exploding, mm-hmm. and
it is.
Which is good. The trail can hold more people, but it makes it harder to get in some races. You really have to set your alarm for the time to sign up. And I'm grateful for the Ultra Sign Up program that's out there, you know, the website that hosts over 550. This is like a spot.
You're wearing
I'm gonna charge them.
You're wearing an Ultra Sign Up hat.
Yeah.
But he's sponsored by Ultra Sign Up.
Just put the hat on for the spot.
Yeah. That's right. But what a great way to make a fair entry, to be able to get in and just have that access. I'm glad we have, you know, the internet and things like that, so that it makes for fair entry. Back to my favorite race would have to be Angeles Crest because I haven't got that one right. And so it is my favorite because there's so many experiences, all negative, that are out there on that course. And I wanted to try to straighten some of those out.
Are you going back this year?
No. I didn't sign up in time because of the popularity of the sport. That was my tangent there. Last time, I could put my name into states, didn't get in, go home, sign out an application, and send it in, and I was able to get in. Now, it was closed before States was even open for the lottery. So,
wow. But you got into Western States this year.
I did, yeah. So that'll be the A race, and I'm excited. I've built up the races before it. I've got a couple new ones in there that will be fun to go see the terrain and the profiles, and so I'm excited. I'll share with you another race that...
you only get one.
I know, but I wanted to talk about this other extreme, because I think it will bring up some good conversation and for others maybe some thoughts about what's in their area. And it's kind of just a running group that has some tradition of a certain weekend of going out and running 100K. And it's on Mount Diablo. It's a tough mountain out here. And it's it reminds me of what it seemed like it would be in the 70s, when ultra running maybe was starting, and there was just a group of good people and somebody that was pointed to go drop an ice chest somewhere and make sure it had stuff in it. And we weren't racing, we were running, and we were running as a group. And I just did this last year, and I'm going to do it again. And it was so much the camaraderie, and people were, yeah, well, let's wait for, you know, Don back there. He's doing this. We'll make sure he's, you know, gets up and knows where this turn is. It was just a different environment than race bibs.
My favorite part of that, tell them how the race starts.
we get in front of the gentleman's house, and then there is...
It starts in front of a guy's house.
Is this a British ultra?
I may be describing your ultra. And we do have bibs.
End ones, right?
We do have bibs, but they're very small, and they're on a printer that he's cut out, and we have to figure out how to use a safety pin to actually put it through this small piece of paper.
Yeah, this is too posh for a British one.
And then we get up to this stop restraint line, and he says, all right, are you ready? And people, you know, answer him back, and he says, then go! And off we run. And it was probably, I think, at 6...
Very anticlimactic.
Yeah, 6:07 and a half was when we started. I ran with a man named Wally there that's 77 years old that had completed a 100-mile run. We need to get him on and talk to him. He was so much energy, and just running with the group, amazing. I just want to be like Wally when I'm 57, let alone 77.
Inspirational characters.
Yes, yes.
But what about the we've had highs, and I think lows provide great lessons, but also great comedy in hindsight. So I'd like you all, and feel free to pitch in any order you like, to give me your worst trail running moment.
Oh boy.
I'm sure there's a plenty of them to pick from, but we all know the times when everything's gone wrong. It can be the hugest bonk you've ever had, the worst kit malfunction you've ever failed to spot in advance, the worst mistake you ever made.
I'll throw in, this was, I think the first year, I think this may have been the first year that I was running. You know, I ran Way Too Cool 50K, and I just got excited and started signing up for races. And I signed up for a 50K called the Rucky Chucky Roundabout. Rucky Chucky 50K. It's no longer, I don't think it's around anymore.
Yeah, it is. It's put on by Elemental.
Mm. Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I put it out of my mind.
This it's was not available for Scott
this,
anymore.
This Rucky Chucky actually is. It runs 50K of Western States. It's an out and back. It goes from Forest Hill, California, down to the river crossing, the infamous river crossing at Western States. You don't cross the river. You turn around there and you go back. So it's a downhill course. Pretty much a downhill course out and then an uphill course on the way back. It crosses a lot of private land, and because of that, and because of a pretty high snow year, there was an aid station that is typically in that that race that they weren't able to get an aid station in. And so between mile, I want to say 15 and the finish, there was only one aid station, and it wasn't even really an aid station. It was just water. There were just a bunch of water jugs,
empty and, jugs.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting to there. Don't kill my story, Warren. Okay. because I was a very inexperienced runner, I went out way too fast. And it was a downhill course, and, you know, it was just the excitement of a race. And so I went out way too fast. Did very well, got turned around, and on the way back, and I just started bonking. Not your kind of bonking, Warren, our kind of bonking. And long story short is the rest of the way was terrible. I got to that aid station that had water. There was no water. I was
Wasn't. Sorry, I was just joking.
Then. No, there was. I was because I was so far back in the pack at this time, because I had just bonked and was just struggling every minute, cramping. I'd have to stop every 10 steps because I was cramping so bad. Got to the water station. I was out of water. There was no water there, and almost broke down in tears, just thinking there's no way that I'm going to make the remaining 10 miles that I need to go. Started thinking, well, you know what, I'll just quit. But then I couldn't quit because I'm out in the middle of this wilderness where there's no access. And I was thinking the only way that they'd find me is after everybody came in, and maybe tomorrow morning they'd send some horses after me and I'd have to ride out on a horse or something like that. And so the long story of this, and I'm not embarrassed to say this, I finished second to last. There was one gentleman that came in after me, not too far behind, by the way.
He wasn't in the race.
But I finished second to last, and it was one of the best learning experiences as a fairly new ultra runner for me. Learned a lot of very valuable lessons during that race.
Definitely. Wow. No, that sounds properly black, and I can imagine the horror at that moment when the wheels have long since come off and there is nothing at the aid station. But not only that, not even a realistic way of pulling out other than getting to the finish.
Yep, that's true.
I've got a number of cards I can throw on the table on this one. many bad ones.
I'm guessing in my mind which one you're going to throw.
Well, you know, I'm not going to throw that card because it is so incredibly low. And we've talked about it on this podcast, so I'm not even going to hit on it. But it's the one that I lay down and sleep on the trail for 2 hours and trying to get my wits back about me and having my 20-ounce bottle out like a wino on the corner, hoping people will spill a little of their fuel into my ultimate direction bottle. I'm not going there. I think I'm going to go to my second American River 50, where I thought I had it all figured out. And that may be one of the reasons that we need mentors to help us through this stuff is second year. I was sophomore year, ready to roll, and I came out of there fast and hard. And by mile 19 of the 50-mile run, I had severe cramps in the front of my legs because I wasn't drinking or electrolytes or something. I didn't know what I was doing. And I had to try to figure out how to get 30 miles with shuffling down hills. I just scooted my feet in the dirt for breaks because I didn't have any quadriceps. I laid at mile 30. I have a picture of I'm salted. I look like somebody, like a snowman.
You look like me?
I'm laying on my back, and I'm at mile 31, and I have 29 left to go. 29? No, how many's left after that? 31, 19, thank you. It felt like 29, Warren. And I'm laying there trying to figure out if I'm going to pick my carcass up and finish this or just quit. And I ended up finishing the thing, and it was miserable. But that was my introduction to the sport, and can't get enough of it. So that was one of my downsides. Tough days.
Very strange how the horrific experiences rarely seem to put anyone off the sport, and in fact tend to do the opposite.
It was just dumb mistakes of going out too fast, of not drinking right. It was just all the things that we were told not to do, and I thought I had it figured out. And my time, my first time, my second finish time was like an hour and a half slower. So my sophomore year that I thought I had it all figured out, I was a much slower runner. Faith Goss, what could it be?
She's never had a bad race.
No.
Have you?
It doesn't. If you have it. Have you? And this is to you, Warren Poole, to you, and let you stew a little bit, Faith, as you're thinking about it, kind of giving you a relief valve here. Has your worst bonk, American bonk, happened on a race or a training run?
My worst bonk has categorically happened on a training run. Sorry, what am I talking about? On a race. It has only ever been big-time bonking on races. The only time it hits me on training is I have a friend who does a lot of Ironman triathlon, and he gets me out on the bicycle every now and again to make up for the fact that I can always leave him on the run. And he doesn't hang about, and I stupidly try and keep up, and then I have a horrendous time after about 40 miles. Hmm. But yeah, with running and bonking, it's in races for me.
Yeah, I think we push ourselves further and harder in a race, so that's why we enter that spot. Even though they're well supported, faith, gosh.
I would tend to disagree. I mean, yeah, right? you push yourself when you race, but then you're kind of stupid when you train, though, right? Because you're like, oh, I'm only going like 10 miles. I don't really need to bring any goo with me. I've done that maybe every weekend.
Every weekend. You haven't learned?
I'm not going very far. I don't need any nutrition. You know, I'm too lazy. I don't want to carry around a semi-sticky goo packet.
You don't have your Girl Scout with you?
Yeah, so I do that a lot. I don't feel right when I train. Of course I do it when I race because I know how bad it can get. Because I've had bad races. I've had bad moments and then races where like I just don't feel good and I'm tired and why am I doing this? But I think the real glory happens when I train and I just don't feel right. I'm just bad about that.
Stick the shoes on, get out the door. 5 becomes 10, becomes 15, becomes a painful crawl back to the house.
Yeah, and the thing that I know about me that I could tell that's like this is a known fact about me is I don't get gradually hungry when I run. I get hungry all of a sudden, and it's too late. And I get really, really angry. Really angry. Like, I'm not nice.
Faith, you're a nurse.
I know. But often, haven't you heard that? Like, nurses are the worst. They don't take care of themselves. We don't take care of ourselves. We always take care of other people. So we just... Like the other day when I came in and my ankle was hurting, did I ice? No.
So you're not one for taking your own medicine.
Yep, no, definitely, yeah.
And just going out there and routinely bonking in training, but somehow managing to be utterly disciplined in racing.
Yeah, I'll eat a lot when I race. I don't get it, but I won't eat when I train.
So what? We still haven't heard what was your worst race experience.
Maybe my first ultra, Woodside. That's why I say I have to go back there, is because I'm not a front of the pack runner and I'm not a back. I'm a middle of the pack runner, but the middle of the pack can get awfully lonely. And I just remember being out on the trail, and that's when I blew out my IT band the first time. And I was such a new runner that I had no idea what was happening, and it just like I just knew I was in pain, and there was nobody out there, and. The trail, and this I still attribute this to part of the reason why I hurt my IT band, was that the day before the race there was a huge windstorm and there was a lot of like down trees, and I'm not talking about branches, like I'm talking about rounds of trees, like totally down over the trail. And so I just remember like having to do a lot of like, you know, you'd run and you'd stop and you'd have to climb over like a big tree, and you'd run and you'd stop and you'd have to scale another big tree. And I just remember when my IT band blew out and I had to scale all these trees and there was nobody out there to keep me company. And I was just like, I hate this. Like, I just want to roll down the trail and somehow get back to this, you know, the finish line. And it was just really lonely. And then all of a sudden there was an aid station. And I think that just like saved my sanity because it was getting pretty lonely. So.
And this was your first ultra, and you continued to do it.
Yep.
We return to the common theme of repeated pain and suffering, somehow not putting any of us or anyone else in the nation, by the sounds of it, off returning. Rather than thinking, that was painful, that's one of the most horrendous things I've ever done, I'll never do it again, we think, that was painful, that was horrendous, how can I not do that again? I.e. repeat without repeating that experience.
I think that, you know, as I've stated before, I think that's the human experience. I think we need to push ourselves into that area to really live. That's my position. We are designed for that. We're designed for as you enter, as you are out there. Here's something, Scott.
I'm ready for it.
Good. Hey,
and this is
as you're out there and you're going through that hard time in a run, just know that that is, you are conditioned for that. That's what allows us to be here. Our ancestors moved through those times. We're built and designed for that very moment. That pain and suffering is where we excel as a species. So do it and enjoy it and get through it.
And the very best bits always lie on the other side of the pain and suffering.
Absolutely.
You hit the nail on the head there.
And you come out of them. We have a person that's going to run her first 50 coming up, and she's expecting to go through. And I think, you know, I was talking to her just last night. I think she wants to go through that tough spot. She says, I know it's going to happen. I said, you want it to happen, Michelle. You are looking forward to that. You want to experience that. That's why you're doing it. So I think we go out there looking for it. I said, it doesn't have to happen. You can manage yourself in ways that it doesn't happen. It seems that we like confronting that and wrestling that monster.
We would feel cheated if it wasn't brutal and painful at times, because frankly, if it wasn't, what would we have to brag about, Peter, when people say, what are you doing running 30 miles, 50 miles, 100 miles? We need the horror stories, because frankly, no one would believe us otherwise.
Those are the good ones to tell on your next training run.
Now, guys, I know that when you edit this, it's going to be between 5 and 7 minutes. but I have not been watching the clock at this end. I have no idea whether we're over, under, or anything. And I just wondered where we were at. And I didn't want to go running away with your whole hours of podcast here.
Oh, you know, we've got about 7 minutes of content so far. So you can go ahead and throw another question out there.
I was really hoping when you made that quip about editing earlier, I thought I'll just put a watch on this. And then at the end, I'm going to say exactly how long it is so people can see how much has been missed. And total schoolboy error, I didn't start my watch.
You know, I've got it here, and I will, at the end, I will come up with the number. So we will we'll have.
He'll make something up.
Yeah, you can never trust my number. Do you have more questions? You've got us pinned down. We really have no place to go. It's still dark here, and Faith has class. You could be late for class, Faith. Okay, what do you have for us, Warren? I'm ready to answer the next.
I think that now would be a time to turn to the dark side of media exposure. Which once you've put your head above the parapet and once you have an audience, there are two things that happen. And the first one of these I want to look at is the great world of marketing, because I am sure you have arrived on the marketing radars of a number of running and ultra running companies, and I am sure some of them have purveyed free goods and offers in your direction. And you may have felt a little bit grubby at the time, but some of those things are pretty sweet and some of them are great. And, you know, I've been on that side myself. But other times people just give you total rubbish or try and like shove these really appalling stories that aren't even stories in your direction. And you have to find a way to either refuse to sell the goods on eBay or refuse the terrible story. So I want to know about some of the turkeys, lemons and disasters that have been foisted upon the good ship Trail Runner Nation since it made out into the waters and became a target for some of the marketing pond life out there.
You know, I'm very concerned where this question came from, because
you think somebody's submitting questions, Scott?
No, because it was very recently that we sent Warren Pohl a care package from Trail Runner Nation, and he's probably opening the box thinking, what kind of rubbish are these guys sending me?
So with the rubbish, Warren, we send it back over to you. What did you get?
I actually, you reminded me, I have had a note from the United States Postal Service that something is on its way, but it has yet to arrive here. But no, this was just from being on the journalism side of things over here, and you know there are some great offers. The job and you know, once you've got your head above that parapet, there are some wonderful things that come your way: opportunities to run, to meet people, to do things. And other times, some PR companies have no concept of what they're doing and just phone you up with disastrous things that aren't even stories or hideous products that you wouldn't take to the end of the street, let alone down a trail. And you have to find a way of saying no. And I'm sure you must have had some of these come your way.
I'll throw this one out there. You know, we've had some. We've been the beneficiary of several great products. The people that have asked us to do gear test review on stuff, and sometimes almost feel a bit guilty of giving just great reviews, because there's some great gear out there, and these people and the companies have worked very, very hard at making them right, and they have consultants and other runners that have helped them tweak the thread count or whatever they're doing, and so it's fantastic stuff that comes our way. However,
this is what we're after.
We did have a electrolyte replacement drink that will remain nameless at this point. That was we had a hard time keeping our faces straight. It was like a child eating vegetables, and we drank it. It promised to cure the world's ills and trail runners' ills, and it was awful, Warren. We wouldn't even send that to you. In fact, I think there was a biohazard label on it. We couldn't even pour it down the sink because we would be taken to prison. Probably see Faith over there. It was bad stuff. So
you end up in the infirmary with a bad stomach in jail.
So we backed out of that, and just we were just honest with the vendor and said, "There's just it's best that if you can't say anything nice, you don't say anything at all."
Yeah.
So that was our position.
You know, the one that I can remember is, and I can't even remember what company, they sent us this handheld water bottle. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what they were thinking, but, you know, it had a little handheld, you know, neoprene sleeve that you could put your hand in. But it was just the oddest shape. It wasn't round. It wasn't square. It was kind of a rectangular bottle. And you put your hand in there and you think, there's no way that I can even squeeze this bottle, much less run with it.
And then the plastic wasn't even squeezable. Yeah, plastic. It was hard plastic.
Yeah, that was not a good one. I can't remember. Of course, if I did remember the manufacturer's name, I wouldn't tell you. But it was bad. But I think for the most part, like Don said, you know, these companies put a lot of time and research into these products, and you know, we have been lucky enough to get some to try, and most of them have been very, very good products.
No, I think you're right. There's some good stuff out there, but there is stuff that there are others that come up, like that water bottle, where someone has clearly then decided running is good. Here's a factory in China that makes some stuff. Here's a picture of the thing we want. Please make that with no thought as to what actually might be needed from its end user. And water bottle, you've sparked one for me. I had exactly the same. It was a belt that was.
Dude, would you send him that belt, Scott?
You see the belts with the water.
We may have one. We'll put in the mail to you.
This one was so bad. It was for a 32 waist, but that had been measured tip to tip of the belt. So on a 32 waist, it perfectly did not close. That was the first part. Forget the fact you couldn't get the bottles out, let alone drink from them, or run properly because they stuck out at your sides like a gunslinger. And then the fact that their capacity was less than a water bottle you could have carried in your hand without all this pain and trouble in the first place.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, yeah, we may have been the test market. You never know. They could have just sent it out to see if it worked. We're a good test group here.
Yeah, could have done that. Now, Faith, have you come across any horrors where they're foisted upon you or even bought in a naive early days era?
I think I was given some test products that I promptly returned to Scott, and he may have tested them. I don't know. I haven't seen the reviews.
It was a sports bra. And it was too snug for me also.
So that one's still out there looking for a tester, is it?
We'll send you that one too.
You know, my first, as you talked about early gear, I had the fuel belt, the one with the six bottles that wrap around you that have about 4 ounces of fluid in each bottle with the fill hole approximately the size of your toothpaste container that when you're putting your toothpaste on your brush. And I'm pulling up to the aid stations with six of these in my hand, and they're trying to fill them up. And what a rookie move. It was probably a good thing because I spent more time at the aid station and could rest, which was probably good. But, boy, the wonderful aid station workers trying to figure out how to fill my six bottles up and put the small lids on them and the ice cubes that couldn't go into this little container. And it was just insane. I still have it. If you'd like it, it's, but I kind of keep it for just memory.
I still do bear the scars of improperly tested sports bras. I do. I have scars on my back.
That's a whole new level of chafing, that, isn't it? I mean, you have to worry about the gusset on the shorts, but a sports bra could really take some flesh off.
Yep, it did.
Yeah, that's the ladies have that complaint. We guys have a little bit an easy go with it at that.
Yeah, I don't think there's too many male ultra runners who would be in the category of males who might need a sports bra in other areas of their lives. So what about, you have between you a collective and hard-earned pool of wisdom and knowledge. And what would be, if you could give one tip each, and this is one to make it difficult, because three, I think, opens the field up a little. You've got one tip each to take on to someone who is relatively new to the sport. What do you tell them?
Start slow.
Oh, you know, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Well done, Faye.
That is one that I have to tell myself even today at a race. And in fact, I can't remember, it was someone we were talking to on a podcast that brought something up. It was you.
Running with
Warren
the
Pohl. Warren Pohl, I learned something with you, a tip of the trade that I used at my last race. And that was running with the mayor, where I waited until the whole running pack had left, and I started at the very back of the pack to force myself to run slow at the beginning of the race. Thank you, Warren Pohl.
And any time. I'm only sorry to hear that the race may not have worked out quite
It still didn't help me any.
Don. And how's about you, Don?
One piece of advice: grab somebody. Grab somebody that's done it before and pick their brain, because people are willing to share. In fact, when we did our question of the week, one of our first ones that we did, we couldn't believe the response that we had on it when we said, "What's your best tip for a long run?" or something to that effect, realizing how much our community does enjoy sharing. And with that known, it's just grab somebody that you're running with. I ended up with Lee McKinley as a great running partner and a mentor for me, because I met him out on the trail one day and I said, "Hey, how you doing? What's going on?" Just opening up conversation, realizing that one of the best things that I did for my running was just greeting and meeting people and not being bashful, and realizing that runners like to share with other runners, so it's okay. So I'd say that's the best advice: talk to people.
That's a good one, Don.
Thanks, Scott.
Start slow, run with the mayor, talk to people. Switching tack, let's go to heroes, because you've had access to a lot of people from the wide world of ultra running, and whether those heroes are celebrity runners, celebrity I think is an unpleasant word to use for run. I'm going to take that back. They are celebrities because of what they do, but they're not celebrities in that vacuous sense. So whether top line elites or people at the back of the pack, people you would consider heroes. Who would be your standout hero? Again, I'm going to give you one each and see what you've got from the people you have met on the trail and through the nation.
I would say those, I don't want to say an individual. I want to say those runners that are over the age of, I hate this.
Easy, Faith.
Over the age of 50 and just still kicking my butt. And just still going and so happy and are out there on the trail when I see them on weekends, just still making a priority of staying fit and staying healthy.
That's a good, strong role model.
Gosh, heroes. You know, Scott's pointed at me. He's frantically looking on his phone.
I'm looking up the guy's name.
Hero? Looking for hero?
Well, we're all looking for a hero. I think that was Bonnie Tyler, wasn't it? Circa about 1986.
Yeah. Hum a few bars, would you, Warren?
Yeah, I'm holding out for a hero. I'm not much of a singer, but she was Welsh. I'm not sure that qualified. I'm holding out for a hero until the morning light.
For me not to have the hero at the ready makes me feel like, heck, maybe I don't have a hero, and that's not right. Maybe there's too many heroes, and I can't choose from all of those. Boy, Faith, I think you hit it on the head. I think anybody out there that's just with some consistency, I love that. I, you know, there's a different hero every race that's out there. People that are just getting through it and just doing it. They don't have to be up front. I do admire some of the, you know, the top 10 of any race that are out there just tearing it up. That's amazing to me. And so those are heroes.
I found the name of the guy, and I just met him, and it's the same theme that Faith was just talking about. Met him at the Dick Collins Fire Trails 50-miler last fall, and I passed him. He and I passed each other a few times in the last half of the race, and an older gentleman, found out later he was 66. He's 66 years old, named John Stewart, and finally, after passing him a couple times, I slowed down and I talked to him and I just said, "Hey, what are you doing? You know, I've been very you know, impressed with you." I said, "You know, my name's Scott. What's yours?" And he said it was John, and he had told me that he quit ultra running 10 years ago, at age 56. And I said, "Well, what are you doing here?" He hadn't run an ultra for 10 years, and here he was back running this thing. He said, "Well, it was something I've always wanted to run this race, and I thought I'm not getting any younger." So at age 66, he goes out there and puts himself out there, starts training, and he ran this thing and finished the race. And, you know, guys like that, for me, that was a hero for me.
Okay, you know, thanks for the time to think about it. And nobody closer than my own mother. She just ran her first 10K. In a couple weeks she'll turn 70, and she has three other races already on her list, and she couldn't be more excited about running. She listens to Warren Pohl on this podcast. She
How old is your mom?
She'll be 70. She's 69. She'll be 70.
Warren, you got to meet this lady. She is amazing.
I'd say she's my hero. I'm looking towards her as hopefully my genetics will take me, because she's in great shape and has a lot of enthusiasm and a positive attitude and a go forward, let's get it done personality. And so I'm going to give her my hero status.
And you have to say, when did she start running trails?
Well, she's always been into something. You know,
she's very fit,
aerobics instructor for 20 years and doing all kinds of stuff. But she started running trails about a year ago, about Trail Runner Nation time. She wears a Cocapelli.
How many people do you know at age 70 that say, "I'm going to go out and start running trails"?
Not starting running trails. So no, that is a small elite group.
Yeah, she's an amazing lady.
So watch for her age group, age grouper. She's going to go out there and tear it up. And so, you know, we all have the opportunity to compete, right? You don't have, if you're not at the front and you still want to compete, you still have age group that you can run for all the way through. So that's fun for her, because that's a good place to be. You can be competitive any time in the sport.
Well, just without wanting to get ahead of any topics on you, but you talk about rolling over into the next decade and getting a bit ahead of yourself there. On the one hand, it can be a downer getting older. On the other hand, you've got a whole new age group to be competitive in, which a friend of mine is very much looking forward to turning 50, to the point where he enters a class where he can really start to kick on again in marathon running.
Yeah, you're right. The 40 age group, that's a tough age group. There are some amazing athletes between, you know, 40 and 49. That's a tough section. Not to discount the 30s, but 40s in the endurance community, there are people that are peaking in that area that have some personal bests at that time.
Yeah, well, I think it's our average age of finishers at UTMB is 42 currently. Mm-hmm.
I can't wait to be in my 40s.
Oh, come on, Scott.
So what about for the podcast? You know, it's brought you guys together. It's brought a lot of other people together. And here you are as you sit with the sun coming up over you in California there in the foyer of Don's chiropractic business. Where is the podcast going? What lies ahead for it?
Do we plan this stuff?
Boy, that's a good question.
We never
thought we'd be at this place. I mean, honestly, like I mentioned earlier, you know, we thought we'd run out of topics to talk about, and we're actually at this juncture probably have more ideas ideas for podcasts than we ever had at any given point.
Yeah, I think we have 14 on the list right now that are current, and we have 80 episodes or so that are listed that we've already produced. So I think it'll just keep rolling.
You know, I have to say one of the things that of course we don't make any money. This is a very no profit endeavor that we're doing. But I have to tell you, one of the things that keeps me motivated is hearing from people, that say that, you know, they listen to this, for one, is pretty freaking amazing to me. And number two, that we're actually communicating some good tidbits of information that have either helped someone or motivated someone to take the next step. And that's what blows me away. I still don't get tired of hearing that.
Well, I mean, I remember the reason I stumbled across your podcast was because I was looking for some kind of inspirational stuff to just sort of chew along with while I was running or driving. And, there's not a huge amount out there. I sort of got other podcasts, but I'm like, well, there must be one on ultra running. And the sort of breadth of stuff I got from the first two or three I downloaded had me hooked in.
One of the reasons that I like doing is the more I talk about running, the more I want to run. And I'm just afraid that I'm afraid to not be motivated. And I know that when I'm around runners and talk about running, I like to run. So whether I'm listening to a podcast, we're making a podcast, or just being in a community of folks that are runners, it just brings the excitement and the zest of getting out on the trail. So selfishly, I'm in front of a mic so that I can keep on the trail. If that makes any sense.
That makes a huge amount of sense. It was, I say, it's been a long enough day here already on just on work and stuff. And it's really nice. I was looking forward to having the opportunity to kick back with you guys a bit and sort of reconnect with my running, because, you know, I've had a bit of a break after UTMB and I've got a little bit of an injury niggle at the moment and a couple of other things. And I may have to miss a race in a couple of weeks. And I just sort of wanted to, like I say, reconnect with it. And something like this, whether it's going out and running, talking with you guys, listening to a podcast, it just does that and re-energizes me and reminds me why, not just why I do it, but why I want to do it.
You know, I just remembered one of the things that is up and coming, if I can let the cat out of the bag, is our web ninja, Tim Smith, is working on right now a mobile version of our website. Because we have a lot of people that, you know, look at our website on their phones and stuff like that, and he's working on that right now. I don't know how. I think it's pretty complicated on getting that up and going, but that's something that I'm looking forward to.
And like Tim, thanks to Tim, he does all this out of the kindness of his heart.
Yep.
And that's a lot of work and a lot of expertise, and we appreciate him for that.
So. Yeah, I mean, because I've noticed since you've had the cameras on, this not-for-profit thing, and I can see you have that massively professional, slick studio there, and those suitcases behind you full of dollar bills. Is that just from the chiropractic, Tom?
What suitcase? What dollar bills? Are you kidding?
We can't afford a suitcase.
No, okay, I'll come clean. It was a point I should have come up with earlier. I mean, I had assumed that you weren't necessarily making your fortunes out of podcasting, but is there money in podcasting at all, and will there ever be under the current model?
I think there can be, and I think for some that there are, depending on downloads. I don't think that's our motive, and we talk about it. We said, well, what's the why? Why do we do this? And it when we start going down the road of, could we potentially monetize some of the things that we're doing or look towards some sponsors, could we do that? We call back to that why. We're doing this because we want to share, to bring some mentors into the earbuds of some people, to keep ourselves motivated about running ourselves. And that's our why of just meeting and speaking to people like yourself and the other guests that you've seen on here, Sunny Blende, that we learn from it a great deal, and that's our why. So we're not trying to chase the monitoring.
Well, and if and when you ever do see any kind of sponsorships on the website or if and when we ever go there, like Don said, it's not because we're trying to make money at this. It's to help support the expense of producing this.
Yeah, we're starting to find out that bandwidth is expensive.
You know, yeah, our our web server, we've had to upgrade a couple times already, and it gets very expensive. The audio equipment that we're using, Don already wants to make more investments in new audio equipment to make it even more unprofessional. But
because you do have more. I've seen the pictures. You do have more than that old MP3 player you began with, Scott, don't you now?
Oh, Don has gone crazy. He's an audio engineer now. He loves this stuff.
I'll edit this out. My wife might listen.
We've been talking right now for about 2 weeks on some additional audio equipment that I keep shaking my head at Don, and he goes, "No, we got to have it. We got to have this stuff.
We want some boom mics. we want the boom so that we can pull down the mic and talk right into it, not lean forward and create some hip flexor cramping after a certain period of time.
It's a medical necessity that you get those boom mics. I think there's probably some sort of health and safety issue for the employee.
Maybe we could get a prescription from my doctor.
There's no doubt that this is a work-related injury. It's very possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think where there's a blame, there's a claim, and you could probably all take each other to court. And that being California, you should be able to bankrupt each other by the end of next week, shouldn't you?
Yep.
Well, it won't take a full week. But if anybody has an extra boom out there, a boom mic holder, bring it on.
We'll do a gear review.
We'll do a gear review on it. We need three of them.
Guys, well, look, I mean, it's been very good to find out a bit more about the shady and mysterious figures that lay behind the Trail Runner Nation. You've created something really very special over there. And it was very good to find out that's born out of, it's really born out of your passion and out of a very happy accident by the sounds of it.
Well, yeah, a very happy accident, and we appreciate you, Warren Pohl. And to remind people, Warren Pohl is a professional journalist, has his own website, warrenpohl.com. Correct, Warren?
Absolutely. Well, you're correct on the website, and people may debate my professionalism, but I am known to be paid for doing this sort of stuff occasionally.
He has a great video reel on his website, worth seeing. It's comical.
Oh, it's great.
It's very. He's driving a Rolls Royce across the desert. No, who does that? He takes a swing at a golf ball, and somehow the ball stays, and the mat that he's swinging moves forward at a distance that I'd be happy to drive a golf ball. He's got all kinds of crashes on a motorcycle. Go watch that video reel. Have you watched that, Warren? Fantastic clip.
He rides Lance Armstrong's bike.
He's written articles. There's articles there by him. He's a wealth of entertainment and knowledge. And so go to his site.
And hopefully I'm not overstepping my bounds here, Warren, we consider you a good friend.
I would say exactly the same for you guys. It's been so nice to get to know you through this. And to feel like I have friends over there in the ultramarathon community. Thank you for opening the door and being foolish enough to let me in.
With that, Warren, why don't you close us out?
Okay, well, I mean, I've normally at this point, I'm just about waking up because it's 6 o'clock in the morning for me. You're finishing the podcast. So all I can say is this has been me, Warren Pohl, talking to Don, Faith, and Scott of the Trail Runner Nation Massive about the wonderful and sterling work they do for charity, for humanity, for running the planet, from people's backs to people's jails to backyards. They've got it all covered. Hopefully you found out a bit more about them, and you'll be able to catch them on the next episode of the podcast. And all that remains is for me to be left with the great honor of saying go out there and run mass. 3 more days. Girl, you know I will.